within her arms, his cheek resting against her shoulder in a way that suggests he's asleep. "Where are they going to go?" I ask, eyeing the large for sale sign staked into the front lawn. Just another thing for the neighborhood to look at as they throw sympathetic glances on their way by.
"She can't make the mortgage,"
Officer Burke confirms through a casual sip of coffee, its pungent aroma filling the car's interior.
"Her parents have a farm outside the city. Sounds like that's where they're heading."
He had no life insurance? Nothing?
"She had to take a loan out on the house just to pay for the funeral."
A dull pang throbs in my chest as I watch Betty Jo Billings drift over to the window, listless eyes resting on the driveway below where puddles of water pool in the indents formed by the tires that used to sit there. The exact place where her husband waved to her for the last time before climbing into the passenger side of his cherry red Ford F-250. The truck he had advertised for sale on Craigslist. The truck he was allowing a prospective buyer to test drive. Seattle police found Wayne Billings' body 14 days later in a city dump. The truck hasn't turned up and it probably never will. No witnesses to interrogate, except for Wayne's wife, and all they could get from her was that the driver wore a baseball hat and he was dropped off by someone in a dark sedan. She hadn't been paying any real attention, and I understand why. With a 2-year-old hanging off her leg and a 3-week-old baby in her arms, the poor woman was asleep on her feet, exhausted. When Wayne left, all she was probably thinking about was the family-friendly minivan they would buy with the cash from the truck. The wipers swish back and forth in a monotonous song, and heat blasts out from the dashboard to counter the chill in the damp spring air. I arrived on the West Coast 1 week ago, and though locals swear it's not usually this bad, it hasn't stopped raining. I don't mind it at all. I find it soothing, actually.
"It's a real shame. Everyone says he was a decent guy. His kids will never get to find out,"
Burke murmurs in that wearied voice that tells me that this is just another case to him. He has succumbed to the job. It's not his fault. It's how many cops learn to deal with the kinds of things we see every day. Detachment. The case sits open, but the local police force has pretty much written it off. I knew that the second I made the request for the files. Under a generic guise of a Washington, D.C. cop researching similar cases on the East Coast, of course. None of these guys knows why I'm really here. I peer up at the little boy's angelic face again and make a silent promise that Rust Markov and anyone tied to him will pay.
Chapter 1. Luke. I drop my glass onto the table with a heavy thud.
"Miller can go. I'm ready to run the shop on my own."
Uncle Rust's eyes wander over an attractive woman passing by on her way to the restrooms of the cellar, her hips swaying in rhythm with the throbbing bass.
"I'll tell you when you're ready."
The mouthful of vodka barely quells the bitterness ready to leap from my tongue.
"Seriously? What else do I need to do? Haven't I proven myself yet?"
I stare hard at him as he rolls his drink around inside his cheeks. Rust has always shown patience with me, but that's a sign that his tolerance with my drunken persistence is running thin.
"All good things come to those who wait." "I have waited. Hell, I've done more than wait. I've done everything you've asked me to do. Do you think I enjoyed changing tires and going home every night stinking of motor oil?"
He drops a hand down on my shoulder, slightly too hard. "All part of the plan, Luke."
The plan.
Russ started singing the plan song to me when I was 13. He pulled into our driveway one day in his latest ride, a silver Cadillac, and dressed in a sharp-looking suit, and I told him I wanted to be just like him. I still remember his words.
"Listen to me, kid, and I'll set you up for life." 11 years later, I'm beginning to wonder if he really meant it.
"Yeah, well, maybe you can enlighten me on this master plan of yours, so I have a better handle on it. Like, why I'm still looking at Miller's ugly face across a desk and taking his bullshit. You said the garage would be mine by now."
Facing off against the current manager of Rust's garage, an overweight, under-groomed jerk who barks orders at me like I'm his personal bitch, every day for the past 2 months since Rust moved me from the mechanics bays to the office as associate.